Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. We talked yesterday about the federal budget with Anirban Basu and our economic crisis. Well, that economic crisis has hit very close to home here in the state of Maryland, and Governor Martin O'Malley announced huge budget cuts. $2 billion worth. I mean, $2 billion worth of a shortfall and $1 billion worth of budget cuts, he announced. We have our operating budget has shrunk by 1.3%, even though it had a 2.3% increase over last year. It's still a 1.3% decrease, and that's our $14-odd billion budget. And it's a total budget is $31.6 billion, and the general fund budget is $14.4 billion. We won't bore you with all the numbers, but we'll put them in context. But this hour, we're going to walk through that. And let me encourage you all, first of all, to go over to Maryland Commons. MarylandCommons.com, and go to the game there called Make the Cut, and you can play this game yourself and look at how difficult it is to make those budget cuts and figure out where you would cut. They have all the areas there. You can make your own cuts and add to them, and it's a really interesting game designed by folks at Maryland Commons. We'll tell you more about it as the weeks go past, and in the studio with me right now is one of the men who helped make that game, Neil Bergsman, who is director of the Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute. He helped create Make the Cut, and it's an interactive game on the budget. You can play yourself. And Neil, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
During the course of the hour, we'll be talking with Patrick Moran, who is director of the Maryland chapter of the American Federation of State and Municipal Employees. The governor said we may have 8,000 state employees being laid off. We'll talk to him about that. Also joining us later in the program is Delegate Christopher Schenck, Republican delegate from District 2B in Washington County, and he's the minority whip. Number here is 410-319-8888. Before we delve deeply into these budget cuts, what they mean, and let you join us with your sense of what all this means and read your emails in the air as well, I want to share with you a conversation that I had with Governor Martin O'Malley earlier this afternoon about the cuts he announced today. And this is my conversation with Governor O'Malley. I spoke to Governor Martin O'Malley by phone this afternoon. I asked Governor O'Malley how he made the decision to fund buying farmland and support stem cell research at the expense of other areas he announced would be cut.
Well, you know, we looked at all of the questions, you know, around this budget. We had to, in essence, close a $2 billion gap in a $14 billion general fund operating budget. So in order to do that, we had to do a lot of cuts and a lot of spending reductions. And the two questions that were foremost in our mind were, how is this going to affect our ability to serve the increasing number of Maryland families who are turning to the state for assistance, whether in Medicaid or at our one-stop centers for employment options as they're displaced? And number two, how do we protect the very strengths of our state that will allow us to come out of this national economic downturn more quickly than other states? So there are very few items that see any sort of increase at all. One of them will be public education. K-12 funding will actually go up next year. But other things, the best we could do was level fund them. And the big variable that still remains is the degree to which our federal government, led by President Obama, will be able to come through with the reinvestment and recovery dollars that so many states are hoping for.
The governor announced that 1,000 state workers would be laid off as a result of budget cuts. I asked him where they would come from.
Well, if you look at the number of state and local government employees that we have in our state on a per capita basis, we're actually very lean. We rank 43rd among the 50 states. So I'm really hoping that our Congress and our president are able to find the consensus necessary so that we do not have to do these layoffs. We nonetheless will have to eliminate about 1,000 vacant positions that have become vacant and that we're not filling because of this downturn. But I'm really hoping, Mark, that by the time the budget is finally considered in late March and April, that we'll be able to avoid those layoffs.
Economist Linda Blimes said the bulk of the federal stimulus package should be in the form of aid to state and local governments. If he agreed with that, I asked him what he was doing to make that a political reality.
Well, I believe that that analysis is spot on. I believe that our county governments and our state governments can be tremendous tools for laying the groundwork for recovery. In fact, I think we've made, I've been in conversations with Speaker Pelosi and Senator Reid for going on 4 or 5 months, helping to craft with the governors of our country what that sort of stimulus, what that recovery can look like, and all of the various ways that the state and county governments can be helpful in priming the pump of market demand in this very sluggish and some would say kind of gridlock economy. So we have we've submitted as requested and even more than requested the sorts of things we could do in 180 days that are shovel ready, as well as those very meaningful things we could do over a longer period of time, say within the next 2 years, all of which would help our economy recover. So that's a big chunk of this, and we're advocating for it. We have great congressional leaders, but there's nothing that we could do to accelerate the day of the inauguration, you know? So we're only 2 days into the Obama administration, and I know he's working on the Recovery and Reinvestment Act as quickly as he can, and I'm hopeful that it will be that something will be done before we have to finally vote on this budget. None of us want to have to lay off people in a down cycle economy, certainly, and that's why for the last 2 years, for the most part in Maryland, we've been able to avoid layoffs in state government by eliminating positions only when they become vacant. But now we're at a point where there are very few options left. This budget has about $1.2 billion in cuts and has another $900 million in fund transfers. And we are hoping that President Obama will be successful. From our standpoint, though, Mark, we could not, in good conscience, not having a crystal ball to consult, put in a greater amount of recovery and reinvestment help coming from Washington than we did in this budget. I hope that will change as the reality of that consensus becomes clearer.
Coming back to his cuts, I wondered why we were cutting community colleges when they were an area needed by the working poor and middle class to advance themselves.
Right. Well, we increased funding for community colleges in our first budget a couple of years ago. But that is one of those areas that, unfortunately, we're not able to make as much progress on as we would like. That could change depending on the big variable of what Congress and President Obama are able to accomplish together in the next 2 months.
At the end of our conversation, the governor wanted to reiterate that what he announced today may not be where we end up when the General Assembly ends its session later this spring.
The budget that we're forced by calendar and Constitution to present today, it will hopefully not be the same budget that we have to vote upon at the end of March. And I'm very hopeful and optimistic that President Obama and Congress will partner with states and county governments so that we can truly spur this economy forward and not be forced ourselves to add to the problem by laying people off in a time of rising unemployment.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. That was our conversation with Governor Martin O'Malley earlier today. In the studio with me right now is Neil Bergsman. We'll be here for the whole hour. We'll have guests coming in and off the phone during the course of the hour. Neil is director of the Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute, and he helped create Make the Cut, an interactive game on budget cutting. You can play right now at MarylandCommons.com. It gives you a chance to play with that budget and see how difficult it is and just where you might make those cuts. You can join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. How do these budget cuts affect you, your schools, your children's school, your job with the state government, your job in your local governments? Local governments are already talking about cuts to their employees. There are cuts going on everywhere. Or you can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Neil, give us your perspective on this budget.
Sure, this is a very complicated budget. The governor had to close a $2.4 billion shortfall. $2.4 billion. When we talk about numbers this big, it's hard to visualize just what we're talking about. $2.4 billion is one out of every 7 tax dollars the state spends. If you eliminated the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services, the Department of Human Resources, the Department of Business and Economic Development, the Department of State Police, the Department of Juvenile Services, and the Department of Housing and Community Development, and the Department of Natural Resources, that would just about total $2.4 billion. So that's the size of the challenge that the governor faced. He found $1.1 billion of budget cuts. No one outside the State House has seen the list of what's in the $1.1 billion. We know parts of it.
So he has not released that.
As of my phone conversation with folks at the Department of Budget and Management this afternoon, no, there was no publicly available list of the $1.1 billion. But they are cuts to the rates received by doctors and hospitals and nursing homes and therapists who get Medicaid patients. There are cuts to local governments for schools and libraries and community colleges. Some of these are cuts to the expected rate of growth. So they're level funding instead of a planned increase. And as you said in your interview, 1,000 vacant jobs and possibly 700 layoffs of state employees. So the cuts really fall everywhere. The governor set some clear priorities in drawing this budget. He didn't pick a percentage and cut everyone by that percentage. So the state colleges and universities did comparatively well, and we have a fourth year of the tuition freeze. Now, if you talk to the presidents, the presidents of the colleges and universities, they're going to tell you that they're still squeezed. They can't. They don't have the money to do everything they want. But they did comparatively well. Public safety programs in the parole and probation department, the correctional institutions, and the state police did fairly well. Public safety's a longstanding priority of the governor's. And the judicial system did well because their budget doesn't go to the governor. The chief judge gets to gets to ask for whatever he wants, and the governor has to pass it through straight to the legislature. So there's a $30 million increase for the judiciary with 50 new positions, but we presume that the legislature will make that look more like level funding by the time it's all over.
How are they going to do that?
Well, the legislature can cut the judiciary's budget, but the governor cannot.
So that's interesting. The legislature can't propose the budget. They can only cut – they can't add to the budget. They can only cut the budget. Is that correct?
Right. Maryland is unique among the 50 states in that our legislature cannot add to the budget the governor proposes.
So, but they can cut the judiciary's budget that they're going to submit to – let's say they can do that as well.
They can cut the judiciary budget. That's actually, they could add to the judiciary budget if they wanted to. The prohibition on cutting just applies to the executive branch.
I doubt they'll add to it.
But no, I think it'll be more like level funding, closer to what everyone else is getting. Funding for local government went down. Funding for the state share of Medicaid, the medical assistance for low-income people, went down because the governor is assuming that we get $350 million in federal stimulus aid to help with Medicaid. He is not reducing Medicaid eligibility. He is not proposing to reduce any of the provider rates, although he's not increasing most of them. But we're going to need less state money because he's assuming we'll have more federal money. That looks like a conservative estimate to me. I think that by the time Congress acts, we'll have more than that.
We were talking earlier that if the U.S. Congress, as you heard rumored and other people have heard as well, that Maryland could get $3.5 billion in this stimulus package, that would ameliorate any kind of need to make these drastic cuts.
The congressional leaders we know would like to get a stimulus bill to the president's desk by the end of February, maybe by the President's Day holiday. One estimate I saw, if it's the $825 billion bill that the House of Representatives is considering, Maryland's fair share is estimated at $3.5 billion. Now, not all of that goes towards the budget because some of it is for these shovel-ready projects We've heard so much about highways and schools and environmental projects. So whatever share of it that is, you know, we get the money, but we also have a cost going with it that we weren't expecting. But the rest of it is going, I think, is going to be much more than the $350 million that the governor's assumed. But let's think, you know, when they do the budget, they also do a five-year forecast of the next year and the year after that and the year after that. And those out years are showing shortfalls of $500 million to $700 million each and every year, because a lot of these things we're doing are one-time only things, fund transfers and stuff. Next year's an election year. The governor and the legislature are not going to want to inflict any new budgetary pain next year. So if they get a big check from Capitol Hill, they're probably going to have a two-year time horizon and figure out how they can use that to avoid further cuts or tax increases at least until after the election.
We're talking to Neil Bergsman right now. We have a number of guests coming in the course of the hour to talk about the budget cuts faced by the state of Maryland. How do you think they affect you? What do you think the governor should do? What do you think the state should do when it comes to these budget cuts? If we get the stimulus package from the Obama administration, it could be up to $3.5 billion for the state of Maryland. But supposing we don't, supposing it's less than that, where do you think the cuts should be made? Right now we're looking at cuts to the city school system. In an email I got from our CEO today, from our Baltimore City Schools, who just said that the actual revenues decrease is for the our Baltimore City Schools between $21 and $27 million, which could be devastating to the schools because the shortfall for Baltimore City Public Schools could now be at $70 million. Prince George's County Schools are talking about a huge shortfall where the interim head of the school are talking about eliminating close to 900 jobs. Inside the 879 jobs can be cut from the Prince George's County school system. These are pretty devastating cuts when it comes to our schools. The leaders of our schools are collectively kind of saying, this is not the place to be cutting. The one place that the state has a requirement to fund is public education. And given the successes being made by the schools, this is a pretty devastating place to cut.
We've already cut way back on our commitment to schools and the Bridge to Excellence, the Thornton legislation. Back when we had the special session that raised the sales tax and authorized the slot machine referendum, they also cut back on the Thornton formula. So the schools are already getting collectively hundreds of millions of dollars less than what they would have had under the original Thornton legislation. Now, you heard the governor say that he's increasing money for education. And overall, he is. But part of that is this payment for teachers' retirement, what the state will pay on behalf of school systems for teachers' retirement is going to go up close to $140 million this year. And that's because...
But the classrooms are still being cut.
That's it. So the governor can say, I'm increasing money to education. The increase all goes to the pension fund, which is certainly needed there. But if you're a superintendent, or more pointedly, if you're the superintendent's finance officer, what you're getting in hand to run your school system for the next year is going to be less. And overall, it's going to be about $70 million less than what you're getting this year. So... you know, certainly we can expect larger class sizes, fewer course offerings, a less investment in supplies and maintenance, and everywhere the school systems can cut, they're probably going to have to make up that shortfall, but their pension payment will be made.
Join us here at 410-319-8888. Neil Bergsman is in the studio. We'll be talking to the director of the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, who could take a huge hit in terms of their membership. And Delegate Chris Shank will be joining us later in the program, who is Republican whip in the House of Delegates. 410-319-8888. What do you think about the budget cuts? What do you think they should cut? How are these cuts affecting you? Should they be doing something drastic? For example, perhaps they should have passed the broadening the sales tax. That might have ameliorated some of this problem if they had done that. They didn't. They couldn't do that. They wouldn't do it. They didn't have the political will to do it. 410-319-8888. As we go to the phones here, Patrick Moran is calling in. We want to bring him on this program. There's a two-page letter that Andres Alonso has written. We can't read the whole thing right now unless we can find some time later in the show. But you can go up to our website this after the show and read Dr. Alonso's statement. We'll have him on the show in the next 2 weeks to talk about all of this. But let me just read the end of this. What he basically says, the changes in funding formulas he's talking about will result in a decrease of over $21 million in our expected funding. That's Baltimore City Public School funding. If we add a rumored mid-year cut of half of this year's GCEI allocation, which we'll explain to you in a minute, the decrease in next year's funding amounts to over $27 million. This should not be acceptable to anyone invested in the future of our students. We will depend on you to ensure it doesn't happen and strongly encourage you to voice your concern to our elected officials, friends, and the media, and anyone who cares about our kids. We will keep you updated as this budget situation unfolds. And that is, the reductions they have to make could really be devastating to our children in these schools. So, this could be a battle on his hand if he has to go here.
Well, we've really seen this is an area where we've seen results. The state has provided more money, has attempted to hold school systems accountable, and we've seen improving test scores. And Maryland ranked as the number one school system in the nation, and you can only expect that if you disinvest in K-12 education, we're going to move down from number one to a lower ranking.
So, folks, what do you think? 410-319-8888. Cut the schools. Where else would you cut? You can go to MarylandCommons.com right now. Go play Make the Cut game that they've put up there to look at how we make budget cuts, make your own cuts, and see what you would do. 410-319-8888. Before we go to our first caller, Larry and Towson, let me invite and welcome Patrick Moran to the program. Patrick Moran is director of the Maryland chapter of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Patrick, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
So talk about this. We're talking about 700 of your employees being laid off.
Well,
possibly.
Right. I mean, there's obviously reasons to be concerned about the proposed budget, and there are reasons to be, a little optimistic, not a lot. But, the fact of the matter, over the last decade, we've seen a reduction in almost 20% of state employment. They've cut the roles down dramatically. And if you're going to do that, then you have to expect that the services that the state is providing are going to suffer. And in a time of fiscal crisis, the worst fiscal situation we've seen since, everyone says the Great Depression, that's going to be tough when more and more people are coming to seek state services, and there's going to be less people to help address those issues that people are facing.
So what's your union suggesting that the governor should do and should happen right now?
Right. Well, I mean, the factor is, of the matter is, there, Mark, there's almost, $2 billion from our estimates that is spent on contracts and contractors that have very little oversight, in terms of the jobs they do and the things that they provide to the state. Whereas,
could you be more specific about that? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, there are people do have state contracts with, in healthcare, in road work, in providing all sorts of services to the state. And the amount of oversight on this is almost nothing. When you compare the amount of oversight that is put on state employees and the jobs they do, we can track the work that state employees do. We can track the productiveness or productivity, if you will. But the oversight of the state contracts and the private vendors is almost nothing. And we've asked for some sort of transparency over the years, and it's fallen on deaf ears. It's time to have some more transparency in state services when it comes to these private vendors and private contractors to know exactly what the taxpayers are paying for and what they're getting out of it.
We have Neil Bergsman in the studio with us as well. Patrick Moran. Neil is...
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Neil.
Director of the Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute, and 410-319-8888 is the number here. Maybe you're a member of Ask Me. Maybe you're a state employee. Have your own thoughts on what should be going on here, and we'd like to hear from you as well. But how do you respond to what you just heard, Neil?
Well, a lot of these contracts that the state enters into are for services that require some sort of special skills, a special equipment that it's not reasonable to expect could be done any other way. But I'll tell you, we've been cutting back on the state workforce for maybe a decade or 12 years now. And the number of state employees has become a symbol of big wasteful government in Annapolis with no logic behind it at all. So there are a lot of these contracts and contractors that do work that could be done better and at lower cost with state employees, but we've had a hiring freeze on state employment since October of 2001. If the hiring freeze were a child, she would be in second grade now. And so we make stupid decisions in how government gets things done in order to enforce the hiring freeze and to keep the count of state employees done. There are jobs that need to be done, and I think Patrick's right on this point. A lot of them could be done more cost effectively, more responsively, more sensitively, better with people who were on the state payroll. So there's something to that. On the other hand, it's not going to be a huge chunk of that $2 billion in contracts. But in this environment, we ought to get every dollar of savings we can find.
Now, there's no accident, mistake, Patrick Moran, that your union, other unions, backed Martin O'Malley to the hilt in this last election against Bob Ehrlich.
Mm-hmm.
And when people do that in realpolitik, they expect something in return sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you expect?
Well, I can say this, that we have an administration that respects the process of collective bargaining and sat down and negotiated our first contract in 5 years, whereas Bob Ehrlich would not at all. And that was a huge win for state employees, okay, because they got their rights back, they got their dignity back. We have a situation where, one thing out of this budget, the one sort of optimistic thing we can look at is that we saved employee health care. That's going to be a good thing for thousands, not a few hundred, tens of thousands of Maryland working families across this state.
And Patrick, I was sure that there was no way you were going to accomplish that, and I believe I owe you a lunch.
You do. Thank you. I'll pick you up on that one, Neil. The fact of the matter is we fought hard to maintain employee health benefits because it's an important thing for everyone in the state of Maryland, and we're glad to see that the governor recognized that and respected that. That's the one optimistic thing we can point to. But we're in the worst fiscal crisis since the Great Depression, as I said before, and we at least have an administration that's willing to sit down and discuss these issues with us and try to work to some common agreement. We're not always going to agree on what the outcome is. We aren't always going to like what the outcome is. But I would say that's a far cry better than what we had in the previous administration that had no interest, that didn't even mark value state service or public employment. He valued the private sector much along the lines that George Bush did, and he knowingly and wantedly privatized things that when he could.
Well, you'll both have a chance to perhaps talk with our next guest coming in a minute, who will debate the other side of that. Chris Schenck is Republican Minority Whip.
Right.
Be joining us shortly. But you all join us here. Your thoughts about the budget cuts. 410-319-8888. What should be cut? What do you do in a state in the fiscal crisis? Is Martin O'Malley doing the wrong thing in what he announced today? How do you feel and how does it affect you? And the number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We read this email, then we'll go to the phones. Lisa wrote in, he's kidding, right? That's the best he can do? Perhaps he's in over his head and should have stayed our mayor. Big fish, small pond is not always a bad thing. And why is it always the libraries that take a hit? Why is it that my children always get things taken from them? How about making business pay taxes instead of continuously giving them breaks and incentives? Ravens, Redskins, Orioles, M&T, PNC, Hopkins Med, Hopkins U, Allegis, UA, and many, many others. What about using a scalpel versus a sledgehammer? The state sickens me. The state of the state sickens me, and his attitude is appalling. I voted for him throughout his political career. I've always supported him. But come on, Martin, is this the best you can do?
Well, of course, the governor did propose a measure to tighten up taxes on multi-state corporations in the 2007 special session. It passed the House of Delegates but died in the Senate. It was estimated to bring in $100 million, which, you know, certainly isn't the whole fix, but it would have been something. The governor's chosen not to bring back that proposal in this budget because, frankly, what everyone in Annapolis is saying is that taxes are now off the table because of the beating that the legislators took when they went home to their districts after raising the sales tax and corporate income tax and other taxes.
We have on the phone with us now, as well as Patrick Moran from Ask Me, Delegate Christopher Schenck joins us. Delegate Schenck is the Republican delegate from Washington County, District 2B. He is also the minority whip. And Chris, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good to talk to you. Welcome. So let's get your take on Martin O'Malley's comments today and on the cuts to our budget.
Okay.
But tell me, before I do that to you, Delegate Schenck, I mean to cut you off in mid-breath.
But take a deep one.
Take a deep one. We're going to take a very short break. And we also have people holding on. We're going to get to Larry and Towson. Join him at 410-319-8888. Let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. Over 70 years later, they're still helping people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com. We'll be right back to talk about budget cuts in the state. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, reminding you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-5555. And talking about the state, we're talking about state budget cuts today here on the Steiner Show, and we want you to join us at 410-319-8888. We are looking at serious cuts that will affect local schools. $70 million shortfall for Baltimore City Public Schools, shortfalls in Prince George's County Schools, where the state often puts up $952 million. They're saying they have to lay off up to 879 employees in Prince George's County Schools. We're talking about an $88 million decrease in education funding formulas I just described, $81 million freeze rates to pay to physicians under Medicaid and other programs, a $50 million cut for community colleges. Many of you are students at community colleges trying to figure out a new way to make a living, and that's where you end up going. There'll be cuts there, $30 million to be cut by laying off 700 state employees, and there'll be an addition after 1,000 more who will positions not to be filled. That's not in that number. $11 million reduce aid for local libraries and jails. So your thoughts, 410-319-8888. You can make your own budget cuts by going to MarylandCommons.com and playing the Make the Cut game there as we talk. Neil Bergsman, who helped develop that game, is here with us. He's director of the Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute. Patrick Moran is director of the Maryland chapter of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Joins us by phone, as does Delegate Chris Schenck, who is Republican whip and represents District 2B in Washington County. 410-319-8888. So, Chris, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No problem, Mark. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure.
Very interesting budget that has been presented by Governor O'Malley, and I'm going to do something somewhat uncharacteristic, I suppose, for someone in my position, and actually start off by praising the governor, actually. There are a lot of things in this budget that I support, and we live in extraordinary times. We live in a time of unprecedented economic pain, and the governor, I think, has made a sincere effort to respond to that. And this is not business as usual. And as you were going through that litany of what is in this budget, we as policymakers and we as citizens have got to adjust to the new realities that we have been living beyond our means for quite some time. And although there are many things about our budgets that we would like to do, we simply can't afford to do all of them right now. And all of these programs, I don't think there was a single program that you mentioned that I wouldn't support. Like any family in the state of Maryland, we have to be of the position where when you're sitting around the kitchen table, there are things that you would like to do and there are things that you have to do. And you just simply have to prioritize. So I will actually say that there are some things in this budget that the governor had to put forth that we simply have to pull back. He had to make some tough choices. Now, having said that, I'll assume a more characteristic posture here, that was the bipartisan part.
That was your Obama-sized part. Now we're going to come back to the Republican part, right?
Now, and it's interesting you should mention Obama because that was actually where I was going. I watched President Obama's speech the other day, and I thought he gave a wonderful speech. And I this is where I think Governor O'Malley's budget misses the mark, because of the times that we live in. And because of where President Obama is at, I think that this budget misses the mark in that this budget could do many more things. I think the General Assembly is hungry for bold, visionary solutions. And I don't see this budget as being a comprehensive solution. In fact, what it really does is it just pushes some of these problems. It just continues to push the structural deficit down the line. Now, maybe he wants the General Assembly to solve some of these problems and doesn't want to take pain for himself, and we will be partners with him. But I would like to see some additional leadership there. I just said that there are some things in here that he has done that are very controversial, and I will criticize some of them in a moment. But there are I don't see some comprehensive solutions in here as far as some of the mandates and some of the formulas. It gets the conversation started, but I think we need to do more than that. And I'm particularly concerned about some of the issues in here that so much of this budget relies on federal funds, $380 million, borrowing these funds from the counties and having to pay them back. That really worries me. And so much of this is again, one-time budget gimmicks, borrowing from this fund, taking from that fund. And it doesn't fundamentally address what got us into some of these messes, and we continue to have a structural deficit.
Well, let me ask you, before we open the phones here, I promised I would, and I really have to keep my promises. Let me let Neil Bergsman kind of respond, or Patrick Moran, and then we'll go to the phones and let you all have at it here.
Yeah, well, the delegate, I appreciate your comments. What occurs to me is that if we get a federal stimulus package in February or early March, and it's not $350 million for Maryland, but it's $3 billion or $2 billion or $3.5 billion. What advice would you give the governor about how to respond to a windfall like that?
Well, it's interesting because the governor in his remarks that I read in the Baltimore Sun, or I'm sorry, it was the Hagerstown Herald Mail, was, you know, he wasn't sure whether it's going to be $300 million, which is what his staff is conservatively estimating, or $50 million, and he will respond accordingly. I think the chances of a $3 billion stimulus are probably not going to happen. Of course, some of that may be capital, and if it's capital, then we'll respond to that, as you know, in a totally separate way than we would respond to the operating. Right now, what he's plugged into the budget is all money that's going to Medicaid, and we asked that very question to his budget secretary, and they're treating it like they would treat found money, basically. And I would say, quite frankly, if there is a windfall of money that comes to the state along those lines, you know what the advice that I would give to him? The advice that I would give to him is that if we have that kind of money coming into the state, that the best thing that we can do to get our economy going is to go back to the advice that my favorite president, that did the best thing for the economy in recent memory would be to repeal the taxes that were enacted during the special session, and that, I think, would do the best to get this economy going rather than the $1.3 billion worth of new spending that was authorized in the special session. I think that's how we get the economy of Maryland moving. That's how we recreate these jobs that we're losing in the state of Maryland, and I think that would be the best thing for the economy of this state.
Well, Neil, or Patrick, you wanted to respond very quickly here because I'm going to open the phones right after this.
Well, this is
Patrick Moran.
Patrick Marquette. Yeah, I just don't understand how the delegate can sit here and say, you know, things such as the combined reporting, you know, tax is a bad thing. I know he probably opposes it, but you know, when Walmart is not paying taxes, when Target is not paying taxes, when Borders Books is not paying taxes, you know, any of these big box stores, and they're going off to Delaware. I mean, how is that good for the economy of Maryland? When you know these folks aren't going anywhere. Walmart's not going to leave the state of Maryland. You know, Borders is not going to leave the state of Maryland. Target is not going to leave the state of Maryland. So you know, to sit here and say that the special session was this horrible thing when we tried to right the ship, I just think it's unfounded. And
well, first of all, Patrick, with all due respect, apparently you missed that part in your talking points. The state of Maryland General Assembly didn't enact combined reporting during the special session.
Yeah, I know they, for that. We
so,
know they didn't. We know
so
they.
So we don't even need to talk about combined reporting. I mean, it sounds
yeah, we
good
should
for you to talk
we,
about
we should,
it.
Chris,
sure,
because
sure.
The fact
well,
that...
Whoa, let's just one at a time here. Patrick, finish point. Let's go to Delegate Shank, and let's go back to the phones.
Right. You can talk about all the histrionics about combined reporting all you want, but we don't have combined reporting in the state of Maryland. What I'm talking about as far as the taxes at the special session would be the sales tax, which is a 20% increase on the working families of the state of Maryland that has an extremely negative impact on the working people of the state of Maryland.
Well, it's just in fairness. Patrick, why don't you finish your thought out just so I can open the phones here.
But this is the thing. I mean, what I'm talking about, if that's right, we don't have combined reporting, Delegate. It's because people like yourself, you know, did not approve it, and you lobbied against it with the big corporate interests. And as a result, there's a shortfall. That's one of the reasons there's a shortfall in the budget, because these corporations that are setting up shop in Maryland and, you know, taking all the working folks' money that you like to harp on aren't paying a dime, okay? And we're basically paying corporate welfare to these folks while working people are paying their fair share.
Well, let me, before you come back, Chris, I will let you come back here and respond. Because I think this is a really important point about what funds they should have, what is not necessary to get, and how do we get what we need. 410-319-8888. You just heard Patrick Moran, director of the Maryland Federation of Maryland chapter of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Delegate Chris Shank is with us. He's a Republican delegate from Washington County and the minority whip. And Neil Bergsman is in the studio, director of the Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute. 410-319-8888 as we look at the state of the state and our budget cuts. Let's go first to Larry in Towson, then to Alan in Pikesville. Larry, you're on the air.
Yes. I'm going to use a little revisionist history.
Okay.
Let's go back to when the state of Missouri decided to build those two albatrosses downtown.
The stadiums.
Yes.
Yes.
And not have a dome stadium to increase the use. You got two stadiums with no uses for 6 or 7 months. That doesn't make any sense, man. And also, you could have bowl games and NCAA playoffs with a dome stadium. So why we got a two stadiums with no domes? That's ridiculous. If you had domes, you could have revenue with the other bowl games.
Larry, I appreciate you holding on for so long, and I think that your point about where we spend state money and how we spend it makes a lot of sense. I remember doing the construction of both those stadiums. We were on the air, and there were a lot of very vociferous debates on why the state should put up money for private enterprises, why they shouldn't put up their own money if they want to build a stadium, and what we should get back for that. And I think that even the fact that you put these stadiums up and it took so long to fight for the men and women who clean the toilets and sweep the floors and park the cars to get a decent living wage, that all that together, you know, begs a lot of questions. And I think that you raise a good point. Did you have another point before we go on? Since you waited so long, I'm going to let you make your next point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to think outside the box and think about putting a dome on this raven tail, because then we could use it for bowl games and indoor activities and not just have it sitting there.
Larry, I'm glad you joined us. I appreciate you holding on so long, and it's a pleasure to hear your voice and call back again. Let's go to another caller, 410-319-8888, and Alan in Pikesville, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Alan.
Look, it's already a given that cronyism and the influence of big business, on our state legislators to cut the best deal for themselves but leave the common man to pay the bulk of the taxes in this state. So, that's a given. We accept all that. We realize that we can't get any further with a legislature that is overwhelmingly Democratic, where there are no dissenting opinions, where the system is in place and it's rife with corruption. But what really irks me is the game of emotional blackmail that Martin O'Malley has begun, both with the gambling issue and now with the outrageous idea of cutting funding to libraries. The children of this state are being held hostage in a very diabolical game of emotional blackmail.
Alan, let's tackle your point for a minute, and also it goes in the point that Lisa, who wrote an email in earlier in the show, raised. And when you have to make difficult decisions about what to cut, and we go back to a debate on revenue and enhancing revenue, if that's what we want to do, between Delegate Schenck and Pat Moran, I think we should go back to that in a moment. But let's talk about the cuts as they are. Is there something else Martin O'Malley should or could have done in proposing these cuts, other than hitting public schools and hitting public libraries? And I have to say that, as a disclaimer, that I'm a member of the board of directors of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. So I need to throw that out there, let you know that as I discuss this.
And the cut to libraries is about $5 million.
Which is significant.
It's significant to a local library budget, absolutely.
So Mark, could I take a shot at that?
Is this Chris?
Yes, it is.
Go ahead, Chris Schenck.
Here's a simple way that I like to look at this, and I think this is really how the private sector looks at a lot of things, and I want to address this emotional blackmail point too, and I'd like to hear what my good friend Pat Moran thinks about it. I look at it in a way as last in, first out. And during the special session, there was $1.3 billion worth of new spending authorized, and interestingly enough, $1.3 billion worth of new taxes authorized. And much of the new spending was authorized to secure the votes for the new taxes and for the slots. And the way I see things, interestingly enough, we're talking about layoffs for state employees. We're talking about, which I do not support, we're talking about these cuts to libraries. We're talking about a lot of other very painful cuts.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, we're not talking about any of the new, very politically popular programs that were authorized during the special session.
As in
higher education funding, as in the Chesapeake Bay Trust account, as in the new health care spending plan that was approved. Again,
Delegate, you're just wrong. The governor has deferred the next phase of implementation of the Medicaid expansion.
Now, it's interesting you should say that. Now, that's the tricky language there. Deferred the expansion, but we haven't gone back and
he's not proposed to take benefits away from those who already have them. You're
exactly,
right.
Exactly, but we haven't talked about cuts. We haven't talked about scaling anything back. So,
and he has scaled back the Chesapeake Bay Fund. And he has scaled back the Higher Education Investment Fund. I mean, he's preserved the tuition freeze, but not the enhancement money that they were promised and were expecting.
We're talking about laying off 750 state employees, the same people who are out there shoveling the streets, the same people who are the nurses in our state hospitals, the people who are going to take the food stamp applications from the people who are unemployed, the very heart and soul of this state government. We can't, for the very new programs, these shiny new programs that the state of Maryland authorizes, we're asking these people to be laid off when we have these $1.3 billion worth of new programs. I find that to be somewhat suspect, quite frankly.
Well, Delegate Shades, I'm so glad that you mentioned, shoveling
Patrick
the streets
Moran.
and healthcare services, because the fact of the matter is, much of the of the snow plowing out in western Maryland is done by private contractors. So if you're willing to get rid of them, we're happy for that, or to have some oversight. Because if there is no snow, they still get paid, okay? And if you want to talk about health care services, such as those in prisons, that is farmed out or been privatized with no oversight whatsoever, we would love to have that discussion with you to bring that back into house and have state employees do it at a much better rate and a more efficient rate and a better way to eliminate those 700 layoffs that you're referring to, because we don't like the layoffs either.
I think,
but at the same time, we don't like privatization either, because we found that it's not as efficient and they're not as dedicated as state employees.
I think you and I both certainly agree on a lot of those privatization issues.
Really?
Oh, really?
That's interesting. I was just going to say we can have a debate here on that another day, but we'll do it with somebody else. But let's talk about what the cuts being made are very serious cuts, and we'll see what the Obama administration does. And I mean, if they take the advice of certain economists, the stimulus package to local and state governments could be truly significant. I mean, that could be where it goes instead of doing the rat hole of the banks. It might actually go to state and local governments. It could be billions of dollars for the state of Maryland and other places. We'll just see where that debate goes in Congress and where that goes. But that would affect, Delegate Schenck, how all of you have to vote and determine where the budget goes before you leave in April, in the middle of April. And the question is, I mean, we talked about earlier, there's no time to talk new taxes, clearly. But you're talking about less taxes. So what do you think, where would you, Delegate Schenck, then cut? What parts of state government become worthless to you, or not important for the state to? Worthless is the wrong say. Yeah. That's pejorative. Well, what part of the state government do you think needs to be cut and that we don't need to do?
Well, first of all, I think I gave you my assessment earlier. So last in, first out. It's the first rule of digging. When you're in a hole, you stop digging. And that was our chief complaint about the special session is, when you're trying to resolve a structural deficit, which we were in during the special session and we're still in now, you stop authorizing new programs. And I think we need to seriously take a look at those programs. As I said earlier, I think we need to take a comprehensive look at the funding mandates and where we are. And that's why I started off by saying I think that that's where there's some missed opportunities here. And I think the governor did a credibly good job of starting that conversation, and I hear some criticisms about some of these programs that are cuts and some semantics about cuts, when in fact we are talking about some of the funding formulas, and there are some things in here where I will back the governor on. I'll give you one example that I support the governor on, and I know that my school board is going to howl, and I know the school boards are going to howl about this. Non-public placements. And this is a cut that's already in there.
And this is the amount the local government
left,
has to pay for special ed kids who are in private schools.
Exactly. And the state of Maryland has been for years paying 80%, I believe it's 80%, Neil, 80% of those non-public placements, and the local school boards have been paying 20%. So it behooves the local school boards, instead of having those services where they have to pay all of those funds inside the schools, they send them out so the state has to pay 80%. Well, maybe we should have a cost share of 50%. So my point is that's going to save us $48 million. Well, that's a lot of money. Well, so I think, I'm not saying that we need to toss these things back to the counties, because that would ultimately represent a situation where the counties have to raise more taxes. But I think we need to systematically look throughout our government and take a good comprehensive look at what the state of Maryland is doing and should be doing, and services, like Patrick said, where the state should be doing things, and take a good hard look at what the local government should be doing, and make sure there's not a duplication of services, and then respond accordingly.
Neil, would you like to respond real fast before we move on, or Pat?
Well, I do have to say I agree with some of what Delegate Shays is saying, but I got to harp on the fact that there is so little oversight over these private contracts and the contractors, as I alluded to earlier. And if we want to, reel in some of these costs, then we need to look at that. We need to have broader oversight, more intense oversight, and transparency.
I'm sorry I had to interrupt, but Patrick Moran and Delegate Chris Schenck, Neil Bergsman, thank you all so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure to have you on the air. We'll look forward to having you all back, and we're saying go to MarylandCommons.com, a partner to play that game of make the cuts and see what they're doing over there. And you can read Andre Salonzo's statement about Cut City Schools on our website, steinershow.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Christina Arison and Judith Lloyd. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and to podcast any of our past shows and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner, and take care.